Morning, everybody. It is a great privilege to be here, and I said this to Greg earlier, it's just absolutely wonderful. Thank you, my love. It's just wonderful to see a church, and there's a sense that you're together around the gospel, and the gospel matters to this church, and it's something Paul says to young Timothy, guard the gospel. It's like the treasure. And just worshiping with you, being with your leaders and your elders over the last 2-3 days, it genuinely feels like there's a church here that guards the gospel, and wants to make sure that we present, we sing the gospel, and it's really, Greg, well done to your team and you guys and what you're building and all of you together today. So we're going to preach the gospel this morning. So if you turn to the gospel of John with me. I want to talk about how we change as human beings and the frustration very often that's kind of linked to changing and becoming either the person that Jesus wants me to become. Even if you're not a believer this morning, I'm hoping this is going to be very helpful. This is not a 5 steps to how do I become a better Arno or better me, but this certainly is going to, we're going to probably meet one of the most annoying individuals that Jesus met in his 30 years on earth in John 5 this morning. Justice Malela, I don't know if you watch the Justice Factor every now and then on ETV or E! News. He does this half an hour where he talks politics and what's happening in the country. And he ends his show off and he says, let me tell you the biggest loser of the week is. And it's normally some poor politician that during the week really dropped the ball or did something. And there's plenty for him to point to. But he'll end his show and he says, let me tell you the biggest loser. And he has this whole thing of why this person is a loser. Well, we're going to look at the Gospel of John this morning. We're going to find the biggest loser in the New Testament. You're going to find the biggest annoyance that you can possibly find. You're going to go, this like irritates me, and I'm a Christian. And I don't, when I read this, and I read this a few times, and I went, why do I feel such annoyance with this person? I wish I was there to bat for Jesus and do more than just bat for him. But let's read, and you'll discover why he's so annoying and why he's such an unpleasant character. So we're going to read from verse 1. After this, a Jewish festival took place, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Just quickly, Jesus, you'll see in his life, really honored the Jewish festivals. He went from festival to festival. He went there, celebrated with them. Good habit to get into for him, just honoring where he comes from. By the sheep gate in Jerusalem, there was a pool called Bethesda in Hebrew, which is 5 colonnades. Within these lay a large number of sick, blind, lame, paralyzed. Just the kind of place you want to hang on a hot, sticky day. Waiting for the moving of the water, because an angel would go down into the pool from the time to time and stir up the water. Then the first one who got into the water, after the water was stirred, recovered from whatever ailment he had. Can you imagine a place like this? This is the Middle East. It's hot and sticky and sweaty. They don't get to preach in jackets because it's cold. Listen to this. The sick, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed, hanging around this pool, waiting for the water to stir. Imagine, can you imagine what it looks like? Can you imagine being in the room? I don't know what you do when you walk down the street and you see a poor, sick, lame person sitting against the wall of a shop. What do most of us do when we walk past that person? How wide is the pavement? How far can I avoid this person? Don't a lot of us just, hey? Have you noticed when you're at a robot and a lame or a person begging comes to your car, how as soon as he comes to the car window, every car like finds another 0.5 meter to just roll a bit forward and just to avoid so the guy's not right in your face. Do you not do that? You're a wonderful bunch in PE. You're a saint. Can I change my sermon just quickly? Clearly the wrong crowd. But it's not the kind of place where you want to hang around. If I just say you, there's a place in PE where all the blind, sick, and lame, and paralyzed hang around and wait for in a hot sunny day, who's going to hang around there? Who'd like to go with me? Most of us would avoid this place. And I love this about Jesus. We're going to discover that Jesus goes there. On his own accord, goes and he finds them. Hey, it's the gospel. We can stop right there. Jesus leaving the comfort of heaven where everything's perfect, no sick, no blind, no lame, no paralyzed, and he steps into our messy world. Gospel for us. Challenge for us. It's the kind of place most of us would avoid. Now, different commentators say different things about the water stirring. Some say it was a spring, and that every now and then bubbles, and it would spring up naturally because it was a water spring. And some believed religiously that an angel came and touched the water and stirred it, and that was it. But now imagine you're sitting and you're waiting, and as soon as you saw the first bubbles or the first stirring, you have carnage. As all the blind, sick, can you imagine the carnage of just seeing it and being there when that happens? Trying to get the first person, because only one person gets healed when they touch that water, when they get in. I can't imagine it. It kind of gives me cold shivers when I think of a scene like that. I don't think we get the and grasp of what it looks and smelt like and felt like to be there. The panic. I panic when I see a cripple trying to cross a road just so the cars wouldn't drive over the person. But what would it be like to be in a room or around a pool where dozens of sick are just fighting to get into the water? It's just not a pleasant place. And I'm deliberately laboring this point, because I think sometimes we can forget the mess that we're in and this world is in, that Christ stepped into. Sometimes we think Jesus stepped into PE like it is today, or this PE that we know, very comfortable. We kind of get on with life. Life's not terrible. Life's certainly not that pool at Bethesda, is it, for us, or most of us? Let's read a bit further. In verse 5 and 6, the story gets very, very interesting. 5 and 6, one man, I love that, one man in the crowd was there who was sick for 38 years. Our commentators say we're not sure why he was sick. There's some that believe that he got sick and he remained sick because of sin in his life. And when Jesus saw him lying there and knew he had been there for a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to get well?" What a question. Do you want to get well? To a man that's been for 38 years lying in this area waiting for healing. A certain man, one single solitary human being in the midst of a crowd, and Jesus sees him. Isn't that encouraging for you and me? We're sitting in a church with a few hundred this morning, and the gospel says Jesus sees me. He sees me where I'm battling. He sees me where I'm sinful and I'm struggling. He sees me in my illness. Jesus sees me. The beauty of the gospel, we can preach to a crowd like this, but that Jesus and the gospel speaks to every individual in this room. Jesus sees honor. Hey, in a world that loves being noticed, isn't this good news for us? We can say to our friends that love being noticed, Jesus sees you. Hey? In the crowd, you are special. You can actually say, the gospel can say, you are special. You are unique. Not just to your kids. Steve told us a story of, I won't mention names because I don't want to get into trouble, but the two schools went to a choir competition. And so sitting, the one parent noticed that the other choir was like 2-3 times the size of their school choir, and noted to her husband, this school choir is just incredibly large and big. And so someone tapped on the shoulder and said, "Yeah, but don't you know that school? What, everyone's special? Everyone's unique, and everyone's a singer. No one can't sing in that school." And we had a giggle about just this, the irony of our life and our context, where we believe everybody's unique and individual, and then you meet someone that's just as unique and individual as you are. But Jesus sees the man, and it's great hope for us. It's the real gospel story that Jesus sees me. Sees me. If I was that young man, that oldish man then, that Jesus would see me. Sometimes we just need reminding that Jesus sees us. Maybe today you're going through some stuff in your life, or you're stuck in life, and you're going, "I wonder if Jesus even notices that I'm alive and I'm here. My prayers hit the ceiling." No, Jesus sees you as an individual. It's incredible for us to remember that beautiful, beautiful truth. His situation is hopeless. In some ways, he's ill, but he's also hopeless in that I'm never going to get there. I can't get there. 38 years. "Do you want to be made well?" Jesus asks this man. He does this a few times in the gospel. If you read the gospels and all the gospels, Jesus doesn't assume that what he wants to offer people want. Isn't that incredible? Even for us today, Jesus doesn't assume he's going to ask, we get to just with our mouths say, Jesus, I want this. Or yes, I want what you have to offer me. The two obstacles for him and his wellness, there's two things. His ailment, physical. He just physically couldn't get there. He was paralyzed. He couldn't walk. He couldn't help himself in there. But then you read later, and we're going to see just now, that it's actually his attitude towards what his situation is that's also keeping him from being healed and getting into the water. And even for us as believers, if you're not even a believer, sometimes the thing that we're struggling with in our lives that we'd like to change isn't just an attitude or a thought pattern or way of thinking. Sometimes it's a physical thing that we struggle with. We are living in a broken world. This is not heaven yet. We don't need reminding of that. This is still this side of heaven. We still have imperfect bodies. We still get sick. We still carry ailments. We still carry brokenness in our bodies. But we also do so in our personalities, in who we are as people. We're learning more and more every year, every day, about mental health and how mental health and well-being is so important, how people are broken. And centuries ago it was, you can only be physically sick. Now we're going, no, you can be mentally ill. And how do we struggle with that? And so sometimes our battle, and we trust in God for, is a real physical, I'm sick, I'm broken. My body needs healing, my mind needs healing. We're living in a world where sexually it's challenging, where there's a lot of sexual brokenness about identity and who we are and how to live out our sexuality. That's not attitude, that's stuff inside of us. It's part of being broken people that need saving and rescuing. And Jesus asks him the question because Jesus recognizes he has a physical ailment, but he also, do you want to get well? Do you really want wellness? And that's a challenge for us today. I read a quote, and I can't remember where I got it, but the person said, we often want things to change, but we don't want to change. Jesus is going for both with this man. Can you notice that? Jesus is going for both. That's why I asked the question. If it was only about his paralyzed body, what would Jesus have said? Immediately, just get up and walk. It's done. But Jesus asked for a reason. Because he says, I don't want to just change things for you. I want to change you too. I want to change how you see the world, how you respond, who you are as a person. And so often the things that we're struggling to change in our lives are moments and are vehicles and are tools that God's going to use to, in the long run, actually change you on the inside. So you think it's all about your physical or your sexual or your mental illness and brokenness that you're struggling with. No, it's not. Jesus wants to change who you are as a person through those things. I've discovered in my life that often the things that we go through, we kind of think, this is the thing. And I go, no, that's actually not the thing. That was just a vehicle for God to use to get to my heart, to get to me, to change honor. Do you want to be different? Do you want to change? Jesus would ask us, and he's asking this man. Let's read from verse 7 onwards. Sir, the sick man answered. Listen to his response. I don't have a man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I'm coming, someone goes ahead of me. What's he doing? Hey, the victim. It's someone else's fault. It's not, I want to get there, but I don't have someone, and someone beats me to it every time. Hey, ever use that? Do we do that as human beings? Hey, it's like for the first time in I don't know how many years, an East London team lost to a PE rugby school. And you guys are raving and making announcements about it. And last night we were talking about it, and the guys, I listened to one of the dads, and the dads were going, no, it's nothing wrong with the players, it's the coaching staff. They've been coaching for 40 years, and they're still practicing like they used to do 40 years ago. And then did you hear about the ref? It was a PE ref. And did you hear about the conditions? It just wasn't our type of rugby or the field. We do that, losing rugby. We were watching a game where we actually won last night, so we're all good. But we're good at making excuses, aren't we, as human beings? Yes, we can blame people. We do that. And he's doing the same here. Get up, Jesus told him, pick up your mat and walk in verse 9. Instantly, the man got up, picked up his mat, and started to walk. Now, that was on the Sabbath. And they mention this deliberately because Jesus is healing the guy on a day when the Jews and the rules say you can't do this. It's not done on a Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been laid, this is a Sabbath. It is illegal for you to pick up your mat. Forget the fact that for 38 years he's never been able to pick up his mat. That doesn't matter to the Jews and to the religious. It's a Sabbath. You can't touch your mat. So maybe they were okay that he was healed, that he was okay to get healed, but don't pick up your mat and walk home with it. I'm not sure. I think they would have found something else too. He replied, "The man who made me well told me to pick up my mat and walk." Like in verse now, this is now when he's getting annoying. Number one, I can't get in. Everybody jumps ahead of me. No one's putting me in the water. Then a few minutes later, he deliberately, the same guy who saved him, healed him from 38 years of being paralyzed, he turns on that guy. "I'm not carrying my mat on my own. He told me to. We've got kids. You never steal biscuits and eat them on your own. If you steal biscuits or cookies as a child, what do? The first thing you do, you share it. Why? Because if mom and dad sees you eating it, you go, they also had. It's like, come on, people. If you don't have kids yet, your kids will do it. It's this inbred thing in their heads. They know how to get other people into trouble with them. It's a human thing. We do that, don't we? We are so good at it. No one ever taught my kids how to do that. I did not have to sit down with Keegan, my oldest, and go, "Keegs, one day, if you go and take cookies when you're not allowed to, go and share them with Chloe and Josh, so that if I catch you, I have to give all three of you a hiding." I never taught Keegan that. He knew it. It's like something in him just triggered. We can do this. I was the oldest. I was the boy. I've got twin sisters. One lives in PE. She's got triplets. And I've got a younger sister also maybe moving to PE. I was on the wrong end. Whenever something happened, they'd go, "Wait until Dad gets home." And I'd share. They didn't care. They kind of figured out what I was doing. Anyway, so the same man that healed me got me into trouble, basically. "Who is this man who told you, pick up your mat and walk?" they asked in verse 13. But the man who was cured did not know who it was. He didn't even care to ask, "Who are you that's healing me and helping me? How's that? As long as I get out of this place, this place sucks. I don't want to be here anymore." I'm convinced, personally, that the day Jesus healed this guy, that the whole crowd around the pool went, "Yay, he's out of here. We don't have to have this annoying, whining, moaning oak with us anymore. He's gone." Can you imagine? The lame, the blind, the poor, they hear who Jesus healed, and going, and there's a roar of rejoicing. He's not going to be here anymore. He's gone. I'm sure that must have happened. We would have cheered if he was healed. Hey, maybe you've cheered when some people leave your friendship circle. Maybe we cheer when you... No, I won't go there. We've had a very interesting transition, and I must confess, there were moments in our transition as a church when certain people left, there was something in me going, we're just not going to fight so hard to keep them. We're going to just, like, Jesus is moving you to another fellowship, to another pastor. I'm just being honest. And if you say you've never ever felt like that about people, you're talking nonsense. Claire said, "I can't call you liars, I can't say you talk nonsense." But the man who was carried away did not even know that this was Jesus that healed him. After this, listen to this, Jesus found him. In the temple complex, he said, "See, you are well. Do not sin anymore." What was his sin? "So that something worse would happen to you." The man went and reported to the Jews that, it was Jesus. I found him. 3 times. In how many verses? 15 verses. This annoying oak, loser of the week, points to Jesus and saying, "It was him that made me well. Now I know his name." You think, how did this guy even make it to the Bible? Why is this story in the Bible? Like I said, I'm sure everybody rejoiced that he was out. And eventually, I'm sure the Jews would eventually say to Jesus, "Take him back. Like, can you have him? Let's just move on." Listen to excuses. He's driving me nuts just reading this. Hey, can you just read it? And we go, "Oh, this oak's annoying." Does he sometimes remind you of yourself? If I'm honest, I can be just this annoying. I can be just like him. I can also make all the excuses in the world why I'm like I am, why I don't want to change, why my life is like it is, why the things in life that's not working out well is not really my fault. It's the ref's fault. It's the bad coaching I've received, or someone beats me to the water every time. I'm just not in the right place at the right time. Hey, if I'm honest, I'm that annoying guy. If I'm brutally honest, I'm more like him than Jesus. That's for sure. If I'm honest, if we're honest, if we know ourselves, that's why marriage is such a beautiful thing, isn't it? Because we can fool ourselves. If you're not married yet, marriage will so serve the gospel in your life. Because genuinely, you can fool yourself that you're right and you are a victim. But you're not going to fool your wife after a year or two or three or 15. And to some of you, it looks like 50, 60 years. Which is fantastic, which is wonderful. No, no, please don't. You should be celebrating and applauding that you've got people that have been married for 40, 50 years amongst you. It's the greatest gift to a church. It really is a great gift to the church. To see marriages that have stuck together and stayed together for so long. It is a gift to the church. But they'll tell you, hey, especially the wives, I don't know, they've just got this knack of being so honest about their husbands. You don't even have to invite it. They'll tell you, my husband, he's not the victim. Don't listen, he's not the victim. Brought it on himself. Hey? I remember my dad was a rugby boy. He enjoyed his red wine and his meat and whatever. And then after a good rugby day, he'd be moaning about his gout and la, 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 la. And my mom would go, don't worry. He could have stayed away from the red meat and the wine. He's got gout. It's his own fault. Like, my dad's like, wife, I just need some sympathy. And like, what? Anyway. Jesus was still healed him and still went back to him, found him in the temple. Becomes a victim again. He blames the same man that healed him, blames him for it. See, we believe we deserve good all the time, don't we? We believe we deserve the best all the time. None of us wake up in the morning going, oh, some bad stuff's going to happen to me today, and I deserve it. None of us wake up like that. You are weird, sorry. If you wake up every morning, you need help. If you wake up every morning going, today a lot of bad stuff's going to happen, and I deserve it. We just don't think like that. It's like, woo, thinks like that. I'll avoid people that think like that. You go, oh, like, thank you. WhatsApp, missed, like, cancel. I promised the guys I wouldn't hashtag this morning. I'm holding my hands very tightly to the pulpit. See, when we do well and good, it's us. We say, we've done this. We own it when we do well. But when bad things, or we fail at things, we go, it's God's fault. Why did God allow this to happen? Isn't that our human nature? Adam and Eve, the first book in the Bible. We deserve better. Hey, why can't we have what's on the tree? Why can't we eat from the tree of life? Hey? And then as soon as they do it and their eyes are opened and they realize what they've done, what do? They hide. And then what does Eve say? The snake made me do it. What does Adam say? She made me do it. I'm a victim. Someone conned me into this. Didn't own it. And we in the 21st century, and human nature hasn't changed. We still think we deserve everything that's there for us. And we don't get it. We blame God. We don't blame ourselves. And we are good at when it does go bad to go, it wasn't me. In the 80s, was it 80s? It was a rap song. It wasn't me. Is it Shaggy or someone? What's the guy's name? Anyway, it wasn't me. Yeah, you all know it. Oh, don't all giggle. Yeah. You know the song. You all know the song. Don't laugh. Don't kind of pretend like, oh, we don't know the song. It wasn't me. Hey, there's like, what do they call these gifts with it wasn't me that you can play on, like, anyway, you can add it onto your message. I love gifts. I've just got into gifts. It's like a beautiful thing. But I'm a bit old for them, apparently. Okay, do you want to get well? Standing at the temple presence, Jesus again asks him that. Who's the hero of the story? Jesus. Clearly. I love the story. Jesus goes and he finds him again. Sometimes we think Jesus will only come once, and if I've missed him, I've missed him. Sometimes we think if it's not now, it's never. No, Jesus finds him again. He says, it's me, Jesus. I did this. I healed you. We need to hear that. We need to hear that he doesn't just come and find me once and he sees me once out of the crowd. Even when I continue to play the victim card, he still comes and finds me. He didn't have to. Jesus could have just walked away. Jesus could have walked away and he would have never known that this was Jesus that healed him. But Jesus went, I love that, found him again. He saw him again. And said, no, this is who, this is Jesus, I healed you. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that so securing for us? The beautiful thing about the gospel is that, like with this man, there's a call for us to own our sin, to own the things we're struggling with. If this morning you're struggling with sin, and there's no other word, when I wrote this, I went, is there better words I could use? I'm sure there's many other words I can describe sin, but the Bible says it's sin. It's me worshiping or finding my joy in things other than Christ. And when I find my joy in things other than Christ, I start doing things that are going to hurt people and hurt myself and hurt God. And sometimes we can get stuck in our sin. And the beauty and the grace of the gospel is Jesus saying to us, do you want to change? Do you want to get well? None of us in this room are stuck in our sin and in a place where Jesus won't step into. We can often feel that Jesus is never going to step into my messy place. We can often believe that even as Christ follows, we get ourselves into a mess. We're going, I'm in such a deep hole, there's no way Jesus is going to step into my deep, messy hole. And this story in John 5 shows Jesus stepping into your and my mess. He could have not. He could have walked past. He could have avoided it, but he didn't. Left heaven, the comfort, the beauty, this where everything's perfect. There's no smell, there's no moaning, there's no whining. There aren't any losers. He leaves that to step into our mess. And he doesn't just step into our mess. He sees you and he sees me. Sin might get in your way of communicating with God. Sin might be the thing that prevents you from loving God and following through with what he's called you to do. But it doesn't stop him. Sin doesn't prevent Jesus from stepping into your life. And the beauty of the gospel is when I can't reach out to Christ, he reaches out to me. That's the beauty of the gospel. In my mess. So if you this morning finding yourself in a mess, and you like this guy, and you're saying, no one wants to come near my mess, you're in a good place. You're in a reachable place. You're in the kind of place where Jesus would step into. And it's true, we get ourselves into messes and we honestly think, no one's going to come and help me here. And there might be some of you this morning sitting going, that's me. I'm in a mess and I'm responsible. Even owning it doesn't take it away, does it? Have you noticed that? I own my mess. I'm still in a mess. Hasn't gone away. I need more than just owning my mess. I need more than just owning my sin and saying, it's mine, I'm sinning. Jesus comes to us and then he heals us and he sets us free. Then he pays the price. He heals us and he sets us free. This morning, that's what's available to you and I through Christ and what he's done. This morning, Jesus can meet you one-on-one. Today. Today. In John, I think it's 20, he says, I will send, 17, he says, I will send the helper. I will help you. He even helps us to salvation. I am convinced more than ever before, after watching people's lives around me, that God's Spirit is engaged in my life before I even have faith in God. I'm convinced that I come to salvation through the work of God, not through my own work. I'm convinced that I'm too arrogant and I play the victim card too often, that if it was up to me to decide to follow Jesus on my own, I would never do that. I need him. I need him to step into my mess, and I need him to save me and to heal me and to change me. Owning it helps. Stop playing the victim card does help, but I do that by his grace and by him. And before I pray for you, and I'd love to pray for you. So Greg's going to pray for us this morning. But there's a therefore here at the end that I'd like to throw in for you as a church and as a community. Therefore, will you go? Will you see the individuals? Will you see the person out from the crowd and speak the gospel to them? Freely we've received, freely we give. The gospel is we receive this grace and then we give this grace. There's a therefore in the gospel. Because of what Christ has done, this guy unwillingly and not knowingly did not have a clue what he was doing. He was so stuck with this attitude of I'm a victim, I'm a victim. And he still points to Jesus. You notice that? Even in all that, in his sin, in his loser state, he still goes to the Jews and says, it was Jesus that did this. And it gives me such great hope for me as a modern day missionary that if God can use him to point people to Jesus with the worst motive in his cowardice state, wow, God could just, he might just use me, honor, to point people to Jesus. Can I hand over to Greg? Should I pray? Can I pray? I'd love to pray. Cool. Let's just take some time out. I really genuinely believe this morning that there are folks seated amongst us. And the kind of feeling I get is that you feel like your life and where you are right now is just so messed up that people would not be interested in coming near you if they knew what was going on inside you. And won't you just maybe this morning, just as we bow our heads, we have some private, just a moment between us and Jesus. Just withdraw from the crowd for a second if you can. Say, me, Lord, I'm in a mess. It's not a lack of faith to confess to Christ that we're in a mess and we need him. It's the most beautiful confession of faith to say, I'm finding myself in a mess right now, Jesus. Would you help me? Would you see me? The gospel says he sees you. He sees you. Jesus saw him. And then later it says Jesus went and found him again. Maybe you feel that God has done a work in you and you've fallen back into the same mess again. I want to say to you, Christ comes back. Greg read so beautifully out of Philippians. He quoted it and it says, he who begun a good work in you is faithful to complete. Jesus was completing the work in this guy's life without him even knowing it. Healed him and then went back to him and saying, hey, it's me. I did this work in you. I want to remind you, Christ is doing a work in you. Christ, his work is complete and he will complete the work that he has begun in you. And it matters not what mess you are. It matters not where you find yourself. It matters not whether you would never even step into your mess. He did step into it 2,000 years ago. He stepped and he came and he paid the price for your mess and your muck. And he stood in there and in Psalm 40 it says, you pulled me out of the miry clay. I cried out to you and you pulled me out of the miry clay. This morning we get to cry out to him. You get to cry out to him and say, Lord, I'm in a mess. I don't know how to get out of this. Would you rescue me? Would you help me? And for some of you, you're the mess that you are is your own doing, and that's also okay. We still get to say, Lord, I got myself here. I'm sorry. The gospel is nothing more than us owning, confessing our sins, repenting for it, and receiving the grace and joy, and him healing, and him restoring us. Lord Jesus, we receive your grace. I pray for your healing. over us in Jesus' name. Pray for your freedom and your joy to return in the midst of our broken, messy lives. In Jesus' name.